1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, Von Miller says, hey, I want to be a Bronco for life. The question is that a realistic goal in the NFL? Is that a realistic dream to have in the National Football League? I don't think it is, but it doesn't mean it can't be pursued. Von Miller, who is likely to be franchised by the Denver Broncos, says he isn't going anywhere and doesn't want to. Quote, I've never been franchised before, so I can't really say, hey, I don't want to be franchised. I don't want to do this. I can tell you what I want. I want to be with the Denver Broncos. I want to be with Derek Wolfe, Chris Harris, all those guys, Demaryius Thomas. I want to be with those guys my whole career, and whatever it takes to get it done, I'm down for. All right, that's a really nice quote, and that's usually what guys say. It usually doesn't mean much. But unfortunately, in the NFL, it is very unlikely that Von Miller, A, would stay a Denver Bronco his whole career, B, will be playing with Derek Wolfe and Chris Harris and all of those guys throughout his whole career. You know how this works. You get into a system and eventually they cut you or they release you or they got to make a cap room or something's going to change or a player leaves for more money. You never can count on hanging with a team for a while. This is not the way the NFL works. Heck, this franchise tag thing, it's got to drive some players nuts. But nevertheless, I like the sentiment. I like the sentiment. It's a good, you know, you're a good football team. You're Super Bowl champs. You've made some good history together. It's a good city. They drafted you. They believed in you. They put up with some of your suspensions and antics. You came back, won the Super Bowl MVP. I like it. It's just not realistic. I mean, who knows? I mean, I doubt his defense is going to look anywhere near what it was when they won the Super Bowl. And plus, you're run by a good guy. We talked about John Elway yesterday, how surprisingly he has been excellent in the front office. And I say that because, you know, look, I don't usually trust former athletes to be good front office people, because a lot of former athletes can't think like what a GM has to think, or somebody in that position where you're making budget decisions and you're making money decisions and you're valuing players in their financial worth. Players, when they tend to do it, tend to go on the upper side. Yeah, certain guys get this. Guys, I did this in minor league basketball. The late Daryl Dawkins was the coach of our minor league basketball team when I was in Tampa, in the early part of my radio career. And I was broadcasting in PR. That was my job. I was like 27. So I was, you know, a little new to the business. I knew how to do PR work, and I knew certainly how to broadcast games. So I had to kind of write press releases when we would sign new players. And the dollar figures, I mean, we were a minor league team. We're barely scraping by, right? We had contracts. And there was a league minimum, but there was never a league maximum, because we were lucky to get good players to come to our league. I mean, you want to know how we were really scraping for the bottom of the barrel? A lot of you basketball guys remember the name Lloyd Daniels, Sweet Pea Daniels. He was on our team. We were practically begging Lloyd Daniels to come play for us because he had a little bit of name recognition and he could play. I remember Daryl really being adamant about getting Lloyd Daniels to come into town. Anyway, the contract numbers for some, you know, basic players, guys who weren't NBA level, you know, talent, was really high for our league. And it wasn't Daryl's fault. Daryl was a player. Daryl dealt with contracts his whole life. Daryl valued what he was worth and what a player was worth. And eventually that, you know, when he left the team and we had to find a new coach, we had to find somebody that understood real value of where we were as a minor league team. We weren't affiliated with the NBA, so no one was picking up our tab, but we had to find somebody that could realistically evaluate players and their financial worth based on the money that was coming in for us through sponsorship and other means. I always thought that a guy in the NFL or a guy in Major League Baseball that was a former player would always lean on the side of players in terms of their value. Now, in baseball, it doesn't matter because there's no cap, but in football, it does matter. And I never really thought that a player who had been fighting ownership, you know, was always put in the position of wanting more money and wanting the cap to be raised and owners are hoarding money and looking on that side of things could run a successful NFL team. John Elway defied all of that. He's not only one of the best players to ever run a team, he's one of the best guys to have ever run a team. He has done remarkable work with the Broncos, including making the right choice with Gary Kubiak, which I didn't believe in for the longest time. 800-777-2907. If you just joined us, we also talked about the three-point line in basketball, in the NBA, and should it be moved back? And why should it be moved back? We're hearing a lot of discussion on this from people who want to see the NBA kind of get rid of this new way it's being played. A lot of people chucking up threes, and Steph Curry is leading that charge, and it's becoming a three-point shooters league. So let's move it back. I think it's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think it causes more problems than it's really going to fix. And I don't think the NBA should really be concerned about having a three-point problem. It's just the way the game is evolving. It'll evolve back if shooters aren't as good. It always does. Steph Curry is one of the best shooters the league has ever seen. That is not always going to be the case in the future. There's not always going to be a next Steph Curry. We may never see anybody like him, like the way he shoots the ball again. It may be back to a big man's mid-range game. We don't know. Right now, we're in a shooter's world. And it's really Steph Curry changing the face of the NBA. But I am urging people not to panic. I don't want people to look at the NBA and see something that is not the way it used to be, so therefore we've got to try to bring it back from what it used to be. I don't think it's a way that you should look at this. It's fun, it's exciting. The Warriors are throttling teams. They're doing something historic. Saturday night, I don't watch basketball on Saturday night. I watch sports all week long. On Saturday, I got to start doing some family stuff. I got to watch a movie. I got to sit with my kids and do something or, you know, be more family oriented. You know how I was family oriented Saturday night? Sitting with my daughter, watching Steph Curry light up Oklahoma City. And then in overtime, knocking down that shot. We had a blast watching that game. A blast. And guess what? It's these two teams, San Antonio and Cleveland. That's it. It's a four-team league. That's all it has. Everyone else is playing for close out the season. Or maybe we could do better than expected. There's only four teams that can win the NBA title right now. And one is so far ahead of the other three, it's almost inconceivable that anybody else would win. Because you've got to beat Steph Curry and Golden State in seven games. You've got to win four out of seven. And barring injury, who's going to do that? I mean, Oklahoma City gives out everything they have, and Golden State is more than happy to take that challenge and give it right back. Same with San Antonio. Same with Cleveland. And right now, the way Cleveland's going, I don't know what's going on there. I hope it's one of those just mid-season lulls and we get our act together for the playoffs. But something we've been talking about with LeBron James is that the window for LeBron is closing on winning a title in Cleveland. And it's closing rapidly. LeBron's got so many minutes on that body, it's not even funny. And he's closer to the end of his career than he was at the beginning. And that means every year that goes by that Cleveland doesn't win a title is one more year of the failed mission of LeBron James to go back to that city. And who could have seen the buzzsaw that's the Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry? They went from, it's a pretty good team, to one of the best teams of all time, an NBA champion, to an even better team than they were the year before, and Steph Curry just might be one of the greatest players this league has ever seen. It came fast, it came furious, and it's closing the window of Cleveland's chance to win a title. And that was a storyline in that summer when LeBron decided that he was going to go back in the summer of 2014, go back to Cleveland to try to win a title. That was the storyline I most wanted to see in sports. Forget the NBA, in sports. A city dying for a title, getting its golden boy back, and that might, it may not happen. And it may not happen because of the Warriors. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. We've been talking about the three-point line, whether or not it should be moved back. Benjamin Albright's going to join us at the bottom of the hour as from 15 minutes from now. We're going to talk about the NFL Combine as that's wrapped up in Indianapolis. I am proud to say I think I watched maybe 10 minutes of the whole thing. I hardly watched any of the Combine. I did watch a lot of video of the Combine. Does that count? Where somebody might post a quick 40 video? But I never watched live broadcast of the Combine.
I only watched the Saturday morning when the quarterbacks were on when I was at work here.
Yeah, that's pretty much
that's all I watched.
Yeah. So I tried to follow a little bit of it, but it's just, you know, this to me is... Nobody kind of tips their hand. Everyone's like, this guy did well. This guy did well. Okay, what does that mean? But I'm curious about where the Combine is heading. Is it really going to change? I mean, it seems to me, as much as people make fun of it, it seems to me it's still an important part of what the NBA does, NFL does. I know people are like, it's a 40-yard dash. Yeah, but there's something about it that makes NFL scouts and NFL owners and GMs, they just want to see that for whatever reason. They just want to see it. And the quarterback's doing their drills. I mean, what else are you going to do? Go to a pro day and be all mesmerized when a guy is comfortable in his own environment with his own receivers from college? Come on. Put him through some drills. It's no big deal. The only thing I wish would go is the Wonderlic test, because I don't know what the Wonderlic test is. I took a couple of questions one year. I'm just like, some guys do really well, some guys don't, and it seems to not matter. But the interviews are important. Again, it seems to be an event that gets made fun of a lot, but in the end, it does serve a purpose. So we'll talk at the Combine coming up at the bottom of the hour. Did you see any of this Aaron Andrews testimony about the stalker case that she's involved in?
I read a little bit on it. I didn't read enough. I kind of have it set aside to read later.
I got to tell you something. I'm going to say this right now. I'm not a huge Erin Andrews fan. I think she does fine work, but I don't think she's the be-all, end-all of sideline reporters. But I read this account of her on the stand. She's in Nashville and testifying against the man who filmed her and got a nude video of her when she was in a hotel room. And it is really shaken. It's like, it's really, she had to do, when she was at ESPN, she had to do a sit down interview on Good Morning America. They wanted it on Good Morning America to prove that it wasn't a publicity stunt, that she didn't orchestrate this to be a publicity stunt. Can you imagine that conversation?
Yeah, that's
a little, I mean, look, I understand some skepticism, because I have to be honest. When this story came out 2009, I thought it was a publicity stunt because it just didn't seem right. And I said, all right, she's probably doing this. And then I kind of thought, all right, no, she seems pretty heartbroken about it. It's really torn up about this. Maybe it isn't. Okay. But my first reaction was, and now when I read this, I have tremendous sympathy for her. I can't imagine that. So this guy films her, has a nude video of her that he's putting online, and you go to your bosses and you don't know what to do and you're shaken to the core about this. You think this is going to ruin you. You've worked your tail off to try to get some respect and not just be a pretty face on television, which for females in sports broadcasting is hard to do. And I totally admire those who've been able to do it, because it's not easy. It's always going to be naysayers. She's trying to fight that. And then your bosses sit there and tell you, yeah, we just want to make sure this isn't one of your publicity stunts. So you have to talk about it in an interview on television. So you know who she did the interview with? Oprah. And Oprah, listen to this. So she was in the green room. She says, I'm in the green room with my parents. And I didn't want to do it. She says, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. And then Oprah came in and gave her a hug and said, I've got you. You're safe here. I'll take care of you. And then she did the interview. And she had to do this in order to get back to the college football world where she was a sideline reporter. God, terrible.
Yeah, it's just...
That's awful. I don't know. I wouldn't want my daughter to have to prove that it wasn't a publicity stunt. Like, if she went through that. So, I don't know. I saw that as the transcript of the trial. I don't know where the trial's going. How much she's suing for? A couple of million, right? She's suing the hotel for a boatload of money.
Yeah, it's a lot.
A lot of money.
I thought it was like 70 million.
Yeah, because she's suing the hotel because she believes they gave the guy access to the next room over from her room.
$75 million.
$75 million? Mm-hmm. That allowed him to sort of jerry-rig the peephole camera.
Right.
On her. And I said this earlier. I think the female reporters that are in sports, it is a tougher road. Because, again, a lot of these women get accused of just being a pretty face on TV. And a lot of them are excellent in what they do. You know who I love? I love Melissa Stark.
Yes.
I've loved Melissa Stark since she was a pretty face on TV.
Right.
Doing a great job.
Yeah, she's very good at what she does.
Very, very good at what she does. Very, very good. Very talented. And I've liked her from the time she was on Monday Night Football.
I like the way that Rachel Nichols has grown into what she's become.
When she started,
she was a little rough around the edges.
Yeah,
but
right.
She's definitely grown in and grown up in her role, and she's really good at it now.
I'll tell you right now, in a room full of reporters, the only one that slapped Roger Goodell across the face was Rachel Nichols.
Yep.
Everyone else was like, oh, yeah, Commissioner, about this video. I mean, you're not really going to, Commissioner, right? I mean, you're not going to, right? And she's like, wait a minute, hold on. You mean to tell me nobody saw this? I mean,
she went right at him.
And here's the deal. Everyone in that room had a chance, and nobody took advantage of it but her. And he was really condescending to her, remember?
Yeah.
Rachel. Right, I mean, they have a rough time. I know a lot of women in the business. I've talked to many, many women in the business. It is tough. Some of them have had rough times. You're doing this for a living, talk radio. Remember this fabulous sports babe?
Yeah,
you know, I give her all the credit in the world. It's hard to do because I can get, like, most guys can get away with making a few mistakes. Like if I mispronounce a player's name because it's Freudian slip or whatever. Mm-hmm. Women can't do that. They just can't. So I give Aaron Andrews a lot of credit. It was pretty emotional. On the stand in this, I just can't imagine having to do a television interview in front of millions of people to prove the point to your boss that a nude video on the internet of you is not a publicity stunt.
Yeah, I found myself quite a few times over the last even just few months being like, I wish there was, you know, more women in sports radio. I mean, there's a few. ESPN's definitely added to their.
They've added some.
Yeah, they've added a few good ones, really good ones. But, there's still not enough because they bring a unique perspective.
Yeah. So, Big E here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yes.
Big thumbs up to you, Big E.
Doing your thing.
Doing your thing. So, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. All right, again, coming up, Benjamin Albright will join us from Mile High Sports on the NFL Combine. His thoughts. And what does he think about the quarterbacks? Carson Wentz, and Jared Goff. What happened to the three-man race with Paxton Lynch? We'll ask him about that coming up at the bottom of the hour, as well as some other thoughts on the defensive side of the ball, including the comparison, Joey Bosa to J.J. Watt, just in the combine numbers. Come on. Is that legit? We'll ask him all of those questions coming up. And then later in the hour, my favorite coach in the NFL may be getting a contract extension. But it is the right call. I'll tell you why. All coming up next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. All right, the NFL Combine. Let's break that down along with the draft and all that news out of Indianapolis. Benjamin Albright joins us to give us his take on the prospects from Mile High Sports. How are you, Benjamin?
I am doing outstanding, brother. How about yourself?
Not bad, man. Appreciate it. All right, give me the take on so far. How are you feeling this combine? Is there a main storyline that's coming out of Indianapolis?
I don't know if there's any main storyline per se. There's some good storylines. A couple of kids that are, elevating their stock and doing the right thing. A couple of kids had some disappointing times. You look at a guy like Carson Wentz out of North Dakota State, come out of nowhere over the course of last year. Probably going to be a top five pick in this coming draft. I think that's probably a big story. And then a lot of slow times amongst the wide receivers. I would say that's another big story as well.
All right, let's get to the quarterbacks, because you mentioned Carson Wentz. Jared Goff, a lot of people are looking at Cleveland. They need a quarterback at two. Is that Goff's position right now as you see it, or do you think Wentz is climbing the board a bit?
I think Wentz's position to lose at this point. He certainly fits the archetype of a Hugh Jackson quarterback. You look back at guys that Jackson's been involved in getting, guys like Jason Campbell and Carson Palmer. Wentz falls along the lines with those measurables, whereas Goff really does not. Goff measured in with subpar hands at 9 inches. There's not been a successful quarterback, not been a Super Bowl quarterback, rather, in the last 30 years to win a quarterback with sub-9-inch hands. The only successful quarterback, depending on how you define success, would be Michael Vick, and he had plus athleticism that Goff certainly doesn't have.
All right, when you talk about guys and how they draft, I love those kind of in stats. When guys are looking at quarterbacks, obviously there's a whole bunch of things that they're seeing. What are some of the main things they're looking at the combine with the quarterback when there's so many intangibles that you're looking at for a quarterback to do?
Well, there's some different things. As far as most of the quote unquote sexy events like the 40-yard dash, those don't really apply to quarterbacks. Although there's maybe some small correlations between the short shuttle and the 20-yard and the three cone. Excuse me. But for quarterbacks, what you're looking at is these drills, the drills that they're going through. Is this quarterback getting the ball out quickly? Is he throwing it with good velocity? And is the ball being placed in an area where the wide receiver doesn't have to make a big adjustment to get it? Goff did throw pretty well despite having subpar hands. Went through very well as well. Cook threw okay. Hackenberg had a really poor performance out there throwing the football, so that was pretty bad for him.
What about Paxton Lynch out of Memphis? Is he still a top 20, top 15 quarterback selection?
It's going to be tough. I think that he could be. However, his medicals did reveal some shoulder issues. So there's some ACL and some shoulder issues there that injuries may give teams a little bit of pause. We'll wait to see if the second round of medicals, how he clears those and then kind of go from there. His workout was pretty good, and overall his throwing session was pretty good. So I think it'll be okay if he clears those medicals.
Tennessee Titans with the number one pick. The consensus is they'll take Laramie Tunsil out of Ole Miss. How has he looked at the combine?
Oh, he looked outstanding. It's rare that you see a tackle that's got the feet that he does. The guy reminds me of a tight end in terms of how fluidly he moves, but with that kind of weight and that kind of size, he absolutely has the ability to be a franchise left tackle for years and years to come.
You mentioned the wide receivers and the slow times. Is the wide receiver grade this year good, or how would you put it?
Well, I would say there's certainly quite a few good prospects out there, especially, with the advent of the air raid and spread offenses now means that more and more receivers are getting a lot of reps, over the course of the career. So more guys come into the league ready to play than used to before. For some reason, the times are just slower this year. I don't know if that's, they made an addition. The pit down there, the track's a little different. The start area is a little different. I don't know if that had anything to do with it at all. Maybe the timing's a little off. I don't know. But overall, the times just seem to be down a little bit. In terms of guys who impressed, Josh Doctson out of TCU, formerly of the University of Wyoming, I thought he was incredibly impressive. I think he's going to be a franchise wide receiver for years to come.
Benjamin Albright joins us, Mile High Sports. We talked combine and the NFL draft. Yeah, we talked about quarterbacks and wide receivers and offensive tackles, but is it a defensive-heavy draft? Is there a lot of emphasis because where teams want to go defensively, getting a lot of defensive guys at the combine, getting a lot of focus?
Well, I think that the elite players in this draft may be tilted to the defensive side of the football. I think people are looking at the blueprint for a Super Bowl winning team the last few years and seeing that, teams like Seattle or Denver, who had fantastic defenses, and even Carolina, who lost the Super Bowl, had a really good defense, is kind of the key to getting to Altuve. So they want to load up with good young talent at the rookie cap level, so they don't have to pay as much for these elite defenses. And of course, you got guys like Jalen Ramsey, who absolutely balled out, can be a one high free safety or a corner. You got Joey Bosa, Buckner, Miles Jack, a lot of elite defensive talent right there at the top of this draft.
I got to ask you about this because a lot of guys watch this and I'm included in that. And we kind of see some numbers and I don't really know what to make with half of these 40 times and whatnot. And then I see Joey Bosa up there and they're comparing his numbers to what J.J. Watt did in the combine. For a guy like you that studies this stuff, what does that mean to you?
Well, I don't think Watt is a fair comparison. J.J. Watt is a once-in-a-generation athlete and defensive
player. That's what
player.
I'm thinking, right? So I think mean, that's where I'm going, right? Like, it's difficult to make that comparison at the combine, correct?
Exactly. I just don't think that that's fair to Joey Bosa, to be honest with you, to place that level of expectation on him, you know, when you're, and that's the thing about these comparisons is everybody wants to get a comparison. And the problem is you put the weight of that expectation on the player. Listen, these numbers are just baselines to kind of gauge where these guys are at in terms of their athleticism. Don't put too much into it. There's a little bit, there are things to put into it, but don't put too much into it. You want to put something into it, go back, get the tape, see where these guys were on tape, how they produced and go from there.
Is there any talk about the combine evolving, maybe adding some stuff, dropping some stuff? What do they want to do with the combine? Or they just want to keep it the same, or is there some evolution going on there?
Well, they do want to evolve, and they do, you know, the process itself, people do want to make it better so that the drills are more indicative of skills that these guys will need at the next level. The corners, for instance, running the 40-yard dash, when's the last time you saw a corner run 40 yards forward ever, you know, other than being a special teams gunner? So I think, I think that they want to do a turn and run. There's some definite drills they want to add and kind of play with things, but I think we're probably a couple of years away from that really changing.
The running back situation, it's gone down in the draft, and you don't normally see running backs going high, but is the class still good? Ezekiel Elliott, what do you know about his performances?
Oh, he's definitely impressive. I know that the Denver Broncos really, really want him to fall to 31 and don't expect that to happen. They would be happy to snap him up there, but I think he'll be long gone at that point in time. Another guy really showed out, of course, Derrick Henry out of Alabama, has all that size at speed. It's just a matter of physics. Force is mass times acceleration, and when you get that much mass and you can accelerate that quickly, that's a lot of force coming through that line.
Can a guy who's been predicted to be a second, mid-second rounder, can a guy go in the first round from that group with a good combine?
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen it happen many times. We talk about workout warriors all the time, combine warriors, things like that. Mike Mamula is probably the biggest example. You want to go back there. But another guy, Vernon Golston, a few years ago, Golston was probably a late first rounder who at the combine just blew everybody away, ended up going to the Jets in the top 10 and turned out to kind of be a bust. So it can definitely happen. A good combine can definitely elevate a guy's stock, from maybe the second round to the end of the first.
Because I look at, I hear people say, oh, the combine is so, it's outdated stuff, but it's still to the players. This is where you can really make some money.
Oh, absolutely. It's the biggest job interview in the world, and it's also the largest gathering of NFL personnel during the course of the year at any time. So for people to say that it's dated or archaic or irrelevant is really for them not to know what they're talking about.
Good stuff. Benjamin Albright, Mile High Sports on the Combine, and of course the draft coming up in a couple months. I appreciate it, Benjamin. Thank you so much, as always.
Anytime, guys.
Well, I like what he said about the Joey Bosa, J.J. Watt comparison at the Combine. I mean, I understand that that's kind of a, moment, but when you start doing real analysis based on that, he makes a good point. It's not fair to Joey Bosa, and it's not putting into perspective all the other things that J.J. Watt was better at than Bosa at the combine. Just to take a couple of numbers and go, hey, look, these guys are so similar.
That's what I hate what the NFL Network does. With Derrick Henry, they put up a similarity of Von Miller.
Oh, like, God.
What's the point?
It's irrelevant. They need to cut this out. Yeah. That's what happens when you make it a TV show. You're like, this will get them talking. This will remind them how what a big deal this is. Why, my God, we could find the next J.J. Watt by just looking at 40 times. Give me a break.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know that I'm not a big fan of Jeff Fisher, the longtime coach of the Tennessee Titans. and the I'm really stealing a lot of money of the St. Louis / LA Rams. He is a mediocre coach and yet is on the verge of getting a contract extension. Now, before you say, oh, this is where Tony loses his mind because the Rams are giving Jeff Fisher a contract extension. Hold on. I understand how the business works. Listen, you'd never want a lame duck coach. That's why coaches are usually fired. Very, very rarely, and I mean very, very rarely, does a team and a coach walk away because the contract is over. It hardly ever gets to that point. Usually when you have a coach, even if you're not 100% sure about him, you make sure you give him an extension because you don't want a lame duck situation. That way you do fire them when they underperform. You don't have to worry. You just fire them. You know, you pay them off the deal or whatever. That's part of the business. So I totally understand the Rams talking contract extension with Jeff Fisher. But my God, I hope I never hear that they're doing it again. This time, fine. Next time, you're crazy. Unless he's completely turned that organization around. Because he's been stealing money from St. Louis forever. Oh, Jeff Fisher is what we need here at the Rams to take us to the next level. How many years were the Rams going to be the surprise team of the National Football League? How many times? Over and over again. Oh, but injuries. Oh, but a quarterback. Oh, enough already. Only team in the NFL that saw a lousy, losing, underachieving record looked at their head coach and went, not your fault. Everybody else gets fired. Everybody else gets fired after 5 minutes. I mean, my God. Hugh Jackson was okay in Oakland. Actually kind of impressive with the Raiders. Lasted 1 year. Fisher just completely uses Jedi mind tricks on Kroenke and the Rams to continue to get work. It's insane. Oh, but he's an L.A. guy. He played ball at USC. You mean to tell me that L.A. Rams team needs Jeff Fisher's sway and influence to get PSLs in a city loaded with Hollywood millionaires? In a city where to be seen is the number one job of your client, you mean to tell me that some agency is looking to buy, oh, I don't know, 100 seats at the new stadium, and they're like, you know, what would put it over the top? Oh, God. If only that team was being coached by a former USC Trojan and a guy that, I don't know, grew up here, then we'd really seal the deal. Oh, just so happens it is. Well, sign me up. Here's my $1 million check for my 2 PSL seats at this new stadium. Come on, people. This is ridiculous. Will they need continuity? No, they need a good coach. Continuity is an added bonus, but they need a good coach. And he's not a good coach. Riding the Steve McNair-led Tennessee Titans to a Super Bowl 1 year where you come up 1 yard short of tying a game does not make a Hall of Fame coach. All of those years, the Tennessee Titans could have done more, didn't. Finally, he goes to St. Louis and he's exposed. All right, there's my rant. I can't help myself. Even when I thought I was making a coherent point about the need of ownership to sort of go, yeah, you know, we want to keep it in place. We're going to give you a little contract extension. We're still going to evaluate you, but don't you worry. I can't help myself but go on my anti-Jeff Fisher rant.
You know, my problem with the whole thing is I understand where you're coming from, but I hate when a team's to a point where basically it's their time to pick a quarterback. I mean, the Rams, they need their quarterback. Nick Foles is not the guy. He's going to be on the roster this year just because of the money the way it is. But they need to pick a quarterback in this draft. At some point, if it's Paxton Lynch at 14 or 15, wherever they are, then that's the pick. But
yeah, go get one.
I hate when there's the coach sitting there and you know he might have 1 year left. Like, this might be,
no,
if he's not good this year, then, but now they're going to extend him, maybe stays 2 years and then gets fired. While Paxton Lynch then has another head coach and probably another coordinator to deal with just 2 years into his career.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons lame duck coaches don't work out.
Right.
They don't work out because it's hard. It is hard when you're in the business of convincing players and whatnot to come. Look, no matter what, look, it's a small fraternity. Guys know who they like to play for, who they don't. They hear from other players, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So let's say Jeff Fisher's got a pretty good reputation with players. He doesn't coach him very well. He's got a good reputation with players. So people feel like, you know, going to St. Louis isn't the worst thing in the world. Now L.A., it isn't the worst thing in the world. I like Jeff. I could work for Jeff. Yeah, you don't want to talk to free agents about, well, you know, Jeff is probably going to be gone at the end of the year. You let the coach be gone when it's time to let the coach be gone, not in some date we're not going to renew his contract and he's not going to want to stay here. And that's what having a lame duck situation is that it puts a date on the end. You know, very rarely do coaches go through that. I remember the Colorado Avalanche. If I'm not mistaken, I think Joel Quenneville, when he was a coach of the Avalanche, did not get fired. His contract ended. And they just said, no, we don't want you around anymore. Go to Chicago and win all the Stanley Cups you want.
Which was a great choice for Colorado.
Feel free to go do that. We don't want you here in Denver. No, it was just two sides mutually agreeing that we're not going to renew a deal. The Avalanche wanted to go in another direction. Joel Quenneville wasn't going to sign anyway. They just parted ways. Rarely, though, is that the case. That's why coaches get fired, because they always get extensions all the time. And as much as Jeff Fisher drives me crazy, and the Rams and their love affair with Jeff Fisher drives me crazy, this is 100% the right thing to do. They absolutely need to do that, because you're 100% right. They draft a kid who, a quarterback, who has a coach that has an end date on his contract? That's not good for anybody. Yahoo Sports Radio.